cars, lights flashing red and blue. Uniformed officers, guns in their hands, came out the door, their voices raised in command. Josh swore he heard one of them say something about a murderer. His chest ached as he ran. Was that what he was? A murderer? A killer? A criminal? When all he really wanted to be was a hero. All he really wanted to do was to help people, to save people from the monsters that stalked them. He'd read tons of comics growing up, where heroes like Batman and Spider-Man were looked down on as if they were criminals. Was this the same kind of thing? Was being a good guy or a bad guy merely a matter of point of view? Was Joss Batman? Or was he the Joker, ready and hungry just to watch the world burn? No, Joss thought as he ran down the street, coming to a stop a block away from Element. Joss was definitely Batman, the hero that the city, that humanity, didn't realize that they needed. But he was going to give it to them anyway. Cage was evil, and he was going to kill that girl. She might not recognize or remember that, but it was going to happen. And if Joss hadn't stepped in, she'd be dead by now. Yes, he'd taken a life, but it had come down to that girl's life in Cage's, and luckily, the coin had fallen the right way. Joss refused to feel remorse. He'd done the right thing, and he'd argue that point home with anyone who wanted to question his actions. Withdrawing his cell phone from his pocket, he pressed number 2 on speed dial and put the phone to his ear. "This is Joss. I need a cleanup on the rooftop of Element on East Houston and Essex. Police are on the scene. No pickup required." The voice on the other end sounded monotone and unfeeling. "No cleanup crew available. Exit the scene until a replacement can be made available." Cursing under his breath at having briefly forgotten about their eradicated cleanup crew, he hit end, marveling at how calm his voice had sounded, how in control, when he felt anything but. Then he pressed number 3 on speed dial and waited for his uncle to answer. "I've got a lead, Uncle Abraham. Assemble everyone in the living room. I'll be home in a few minutes." He turned back then, looking at the lights of the police cars from a distance as they flashed brightly against the surrounding buildings. People on the sidewalk spoke animatedly and pointed at the building that held Element and the vault. Police officers and security guards began a search around the perimeter of the building. Just as Joss was turning away from the scene, something gave him pause. It was the sight of a girl his age running up the front steps into the nightclub. She wore black and red striped tights, a black lace tutu, military combat boots, and what looked like a concert t-shirt from a band called the Mopey Teenage Bears. It was M. Joss would have bet his stake that the girl he saw was the girl from his picture, the girl who wasn't a girl at all, but rather an inhuman, blood-drinking monster. From a distance, she looked a lot like Kat. But Joss shook away that thought immediately and turned from the scene, breaking into a run once again. He couldn't think about Kat right now, couldn't think about Cyrus or last summer at all. He couldn't think about M, or the fact that he was running away and leaving Morgan behind in the mix of so much chaos. He could only think about getting back to base and washing the blood from his hands. Chapter 16. In the Company of Liars. A yawn escaped Joss as he climbed the brownstone's front steps, but he shook it off. He was in no mood for another night's sleep, another evening of nightmares in which he would be tormented by a horrific version of his little sister. He knew he had the nightmares, but most times, the details of which were extremely difficult to recall. Still, simply waking up with his heart racing, his body soaked with sweat, his tears drenching his cheeks was enough for him to want to keep the dream Cecile at bay. There were times, though he would never admit it to anyone else, when he wondered if the dream Cecile were actually real, rather than a part of his distorted subconscious. The idea scared the hell out of him, and made it even more difficult to fall asleep at night. Nightmare Cecile was terrifying, but he could deal with her. If she were actually real, actually his younger sister back from the dead and looking for revenge against her older brother. Joss might as well lock himself away in a padded room and hope that that was the worst of his life from here on out. Uncle Abraham and the other Slayers were waiting in the living room, expectant expressions on their faces. Joss didn't sit. as it didn't seem like he was supposed to make himself cozy while he regaled the other slayers with his tale of carnage. Creighton said, "So, Morgan has told us his side of the story. What's yours exactly?" Morgan stood at the other end of the room, looking down at the floor between his feet. Joss couldn't shake the feeling that they were in trouble somehow, even though this was what they were supposed to be doing, killing vampires, killing these vampires in particular. Morgan shrugged, darting a glance at Joss with a hint of embarrassment.
"I'm afraid mine got away from me, little brother."
Patty snorted.
"Maybe it wouldn't have if you hadn't been so distracted by the short skirt."
The room grew very quiet, full of a tension that hung in the air, as thick as a New England fog. Joss cleared his throat before beginning. Then he told them everything, everything but details of Dorian's involvement. Something in his gut told him that involving Dorian anymore would create problems for him, maybe for them both. Telling Morgan about Dorian was one thing. Telling Uncle Abraham would be quite another. As he spoke, he kept his voice even and calm, answering the occasional question with ease. But one question, one asked by Ash, gave him pause.
"How did you get into the vault? From what I've heard, the bouncers there are pretty strict."
At this, even Morgan raised his eyebrows. Joss cleared his throat to buy some time, time in which he scrambled inside his mind for a reply that wouldn't implicate Dorian and his strange involvement in Joss's life. As he hurried to reply, not really knowing what he should say, the actor in him took the reins and smiled, cocking his head slightly to the side with sly confidence.
"Let's just say I'm a smooth talker and leave it at that."
Creighton, Ash, Patty, and Morgan laughed aloud. Abraham did not.
"And why exactly did you fail to follow protocol and keep the citizens of New York out of your mess?"
His smile crumbled, but no words came. But he suspected that that had been Abraham's intention, to silence him in the face of Joss's vanity. Abraham stood as if to leave the room, and his movement stirred Joss's subconscious, bringing something important to the top.
"There's one other thing."
"What's that?"
his uncle inquired, an air of doubt hanging over his every word.
"I know where they prefer to hunt, and money says we'll find them there."
"Oh?"
Abraham raised an eyebrow.
"And where's that?"
Joss straightened his shoulders confidently.
"Central Park."
Abraham grew quiet at first. Then he grunted.
"We shall see."
The air carried a tension in it. Maybe it was because Joss had succeeded in killing Cage, but everyone knew that there were more brothers out there to be dealt with. Maybe it was nothing. Later, as he dabbed hydrogen peroxide on the small cuts on his face and the few on his elbows and knees, Joss tried hard not to think too much about what had just transpired. He didn't think about the way that blood had sprayed from the vampire's body and splashed against his cheek. He merely watched the peroxide as it bubbled wildly against his wounds. On the surface, he was emotionless, a machine that served a single purpose and had dutifully fulfilled that purpose well tonight. The Slayer Society had tasked him with the destruction of a killer, of what had turned out to be a group of killers, and Joss had eradicated a second one. Eradicated. It sounded so much more pleasant than killed. The cut on his cheek was deeper than the rest, and Joss couldn't for the life of him recall the exact moment when he'd received that particular injury. He looked it over in the mirror, leaning closer to his reflection and tilting his head this way and that. There was no avoiding the fact that it needed to be stitched closed. If he forewent that nasty little task, he was going to have a scar. Joss might not have been as vain as many people viewed the McMillans, but the idea of a scar lining his cheek did bother him, even though his Uncle Mike probably would elbow him and laugh and say that chicks dig scars. Joss wasn't at all girl crazy, but the idea of chicks digging him was pretty appealing. Still, he hated the idea of a scar on his face. So chicks would just have to find some other reason to dig him.
"What are you thinking about?"
Patty was leaning against the door jamb of the bathroom, overseeing his nursing skills. He was relieved that she'd followed him upstairs after his debriefing, and not one of the other slayers. Patty was more gentle than the rest of his team, and what Joss really wanted right now was to be with someone who'd be gentle.
Just wondering if what my Uncle Mike told me is true. He said that chicks dig scars.
Patty grinned, her eyes on his wounded cheek.
Oh, yeah. You're going to have the ladies lining up around the block with that baby.
A laugh escaped Joss. It was pleasant and completely unexpected. Chasing it was curiosity. Maybe Patty, being a chick and all, knew what made chicks like someone. It was something to talk to Henry about for sure.
Retrieving a large, sterile needle from a package inside the medicine cabinet, Joss reached for the bottle of rubbing alcohol and stitching thread. He'd seen Cyrus sew stitches at the cabin last summer, and Cyrus had kindly given him tips, just in case one day Joss would be sewing his own stitches.
The key, Cyrus had said, is to get your stitches as close together as you can. Keep them tight and you'll scar less. Take your time, focus on your task, and breathe through the pain.
Patty's forehead was lined with concern.
Are you sure you don't want me to do it? I'm fairly good with the needle, and it is on your pretty face after all.
He shook his head. I can do it.
Listen, Joss, about what Abraham said at your debriefing.
It's okay, Patty. He'd snapped at her and instantly regretted it. Flicking a glance her way, he nodded his apology.
It's really okay. He's right. I was messy. I should have taken Cage down without the cops having been called.
Patty stepped forward then and placed her hands on his shoulders, meeting his eyes with warmth and understanding.
You did a great job, and I think you're right. I think we could find the other brothers in Central Park. Your uncle just struggles with the concept of encouragement, that's all. Don't worry, you're doing fine, Joss, okay?
It wasn't okay, but he knew that Patty wouldn't accept that as a reply, so instead he simply nodded again. She glanced at the needle.
Want me to stay or go while you sew yourself up?
He gestured to the door with his chin.
If you wouldn't mind, I'd rather do this part alone.
Just in case he cried, but he didn't say that part out loud. Patty kissed his uncut cheek lightly and gave his shoulders a gentle squeeze before slipping out the door and closing it behind her. Joss cleaned the already clean needle with alcohol, as well as the thread in the wound itself. Then he threaded it, leaned close to his reflection, took a deep breath, and pinched his cut closed, shoving the needle through his skin. The pain was burning and immediate, and before Joss realized that the voice was his, a string of curse words echoed into the room. But he pushed forward, looping the stitch as tightly as he possibly could, and poked the needle through again. By the fourth stitch, he hardly felt the pain, so grateful for endorphins that he almost thanked them aloud. He finished up his sewing handiwork and tied a tiny knot at the end. After he washed the wound again, he looked closely at his stitching skills. It wasn't perfect, but it wasn't bad. The stitches were relatively close, and he was certain that Cyrus would have given him a pat on the back if he were here. But Cyrus wasn't here. Cyrus wasn't anywhere anymore. Cyrus was dead, because Joss had killed him. Like Joss had killed the vampire on the bar's roof tonight, and his brother in an alley the other night. Joss was a killer. A killer of vampires. It's what he did. Who he was. And every time a vampire died, it brought him that much closer to soothing Cecile's tortured, restless soul. Joss set his jaw and turned away from the mirror, unable for the moment to look himself in the eye. Chapter 17. Family Dinner. It was late, but Joss was starving. He descended the stairs, only to find Ash and Creighton arguing over who got the last two pieces of bread in the house. Apparently, Joss's stomach wasn't the only one rumbling in the late night. Patty stood, clapping her hands together, as if to punctuate the end of their argument.
I'm starving. Who's up for a late-night dinner out?
Abraham said,
I know a wonderful restaurant not far from here.
Morgan raised an eyebrow, clearly suspicious.
You buying, boss?
Without replying, Abraham stood and exited the room. Joss exchanged glances with the other slayers, but no one further questioned Abraham's sudden onset of generosity. They merely stood and made their way to the door. As they filed out the front door, Abraham placed a hand on Joss's shoulder, stopping him briefly. Then he called to the others.
2 blocks east. You can't miss it. Has striped awnings. We'll be along shortly.
He watched the other slayers move forward for a moment before speaking to his nephew in a low, somber voice.
Don't think me a fool, boy. I'm well aware that both you and Morgan are keeping something from us. And if you think I won't find out the details of your little secret, you are sorely mistaken.
Joss swallowed, his throat burning for a moment. The heat quickly found its way up and out, setting his skin aflame with guilt. He opened his mouth to say something, anything really, that might set his uncle's suspicions at ease, but then closed it again. Nothing he could say would make his uncle believe him, not even if he had nothing to hide. But he did have something to hide, and for some reason, Morgan seemed to think that hiding the fact that Joss knew Dorian was a good idea, so Joss followed suit and gave away no secrets. Instead, he looked his uncle in the eye and said, Uncle, I have no idea what you're insinuating, but Morgan and I have nothing to hide, and quite frankly, your tone seems a bit edged in panic and conspiracy. The corner of Abraham's mouth lifted in a strange smile, and he turned away. For a moment, Joss thought that their conversation was over and that Abraham was leaving without further comment. But then his uncle turned back to him and gripped the front of his shirt with his hand, twisting the fabric until Joss was convinced that it would rip. To his surprise, the fabric held. Abraham pulled him closer as he spoke. His words didn't seem like words at all, but a bit like steam after water has been dripped onto a hot surface.
Don't think you can pull one over on me, boy. I've seen things, done things that would curl the hair on your backside. I've lived 10 lifetimes with one life, and I can spot a liar 100 yards away.
Joss's heart betrayed him, picking up its pace with a steady thump, thump, thump. As his uncle pulled him even closer, until their noses were almost touching, his heart almost stopped. Abraham hissed.
And you, boy, are a liar.
The actor Joss set his jaw and then forced a calm smile. Think what you want about me, old man. When Abraham released him, he did so forcefully, shoving Joss backward, as if he couldn't stand to be in his company for even a moment longer. Joss stumbled, but regained his composure and then smoothed out the wrinkles in the front of his shirt. Without another glance at his uncle, he turned and walked in the direction that the other slayers had. He found them 2 blocks up. Morgan immediately leaned over and quietly said,
Everything okay, little brother?
He nodded in response, wondering if Morgan could read the anger in his eyes. Something told him that Morgan could see through the actor to the real Joss within.
Fine. Everything's fine. But I'm a liar and he knows it.
Morgan nodded.
I'm a lawyer too, kid. But so are poker players. And a good card shark knows when to show their hand and when to keep their mouth shut.
Joss regarded him for a moment as he listened to his uncle's steps approaching softly behind him. He had the distinct impression that Morgan was not only telling him that it was okay that they'd lied to his uncle, he was also saying that they should keep lying to him. Until... Well, Joss had no idea until when, but he did know one thing. He trusted Morgan. The tiny hairs on the back of his neck, he'd trusted Cyrus too. And at one point in time, he'd trusted Vlad. What did that say about his level of trust in people? Maybe he was incapable of trusting the right people. Maybe Morgan was someone that he shouldn't be listening to at all. From the outside, the restaurant looked like any other small Manhattan eatery. And from the inside, it was much the same. So Joss couldn't figure out exactly why his uncle's energy seemed to suggest that this was absolutely the place to dine in New York City. Regardless, Abraham strode inside and approached the hostess with the air of someone who was greatly pleased with himself.
There are 6 of us tonight, dear. Would it be too much trouble to locate a private table in the room? Something with atmosphere?
The hostess smiled and scanned the pile of papers on her podium for a moment before answering.
Yes, I think that's something we can arrange, sir.
Then Abraham leaned closer to her, a whisper escaping his lips. Words that Joss could not distinguish, no matter how hard he strained his hearing. When he was finished, the hostess smiled brightly and said,
Certainly, sir. Now if you'll all please follow me.
She led them through the dimly lit room to a large round table in the far corner. Once they were all seated, a man stepped forward and smiled.
Good evening, everyone. My name is Marcus. I'll be serving you tonight. Can I get everyone's drink order?
But before Joss could utter the words Mountain Dew, the hostess whispered to Marcus, who smiled and said,
Of course, right away.
Marcus, who Joss highly suspected of simply being Mark when he wasn't working at a hip, posh restaurant, disappeared and a moment later was replaced by a lean man with long black hair that curled at the ends. His eyes were bright green, and when he smiled, Joss felt a strange wave of caution move through his insides. When he approached the table, he stood behind Morgan's chair and said,
Good evening, all. I'm Jacques, the owner of this establishment. Marcus tells me that my company has been requested at your table. Is everything to your liking so far?
As Joss watched, the color bled from Morgan's face, and everything that made Morgan, well, Morgan, went away in a flush of shock. He turned around slowly, and when he and the owner locked eyes, the air left the room. Abraham sat back in his chair and smiled. Jacques glanced at each of Morgan's table mates before clapping his hands together, hands that might have been trembling in surprise. Joss didn't know.
Champagne, the best we have. Excuse me, I won't be a moment.
Once he'd left the table, some of the color returned to Morgan's face, but not much. Joss leaned over to him and said,
Do you two know each other?
Morgan sipped his water, but pursed his lips as if it tasted bitter. Something about the look on his face said that it had nothing to do with the water.
Oh, you wouldn't say that.
Joss furrowed his brow, confused.
It
just looked like you'd spoken before. Morgan raised his glass then, and Joss had a feeling he wished that it were something a bit stronger than water. He set the glass down, a bit harder than was necessary, and when he turned his eyes to Joss, Joss could see the threat of furious tears lurking in Morgan's baby blue eyes.
Once upon a time, that man was my brother.
Joss looked over at the man at the bar. He could certainly see a resemblance. But Morgan's use of past tense only confounded him further.
He's not anymore? What happened?
Morgan followed Joss's eyes to the man in question. Under his breath, he said,
He died.
Chapter 18. Blood Brothers. Joss chewed each bite of steak carefully, and when Jacques asked if anyone wanted dessert, he ordered a slice of cheesecake, but truth be told, he wasn't feeling very hungry. From across the room, he watched Morgan's brother, who watched Morgan, who tried to act as if he wasn't aware that his dead brother was standing in the same restaurant as he. Dinner conversation was awkward, and glances across the table, full of concern and questioning, made it even more awkward. The only one who seemed completely at ease was Abraham, who had just wolfed down a big fillet and was looking forward to dessert like nobody's business. Joss kept an eye on Morgan's rocks glass, but it had been emptied a few times now, and he was pretty sure it wasn't helping him feel any better about what was bothering him. Morgan stared forward, eyes glazed, and when Jacques asked what he'd like for dessert, Morgan growled,
A double.
Dessert came, and so did Morgan's drink. And all Joss could think about was getting out of this place and getting Morgan away from the specter across the room. Jacques had no sooner set a new glass on the table than Morgan gripped the glass and lifted it to his mouth, emptying a third of it in a single swig. Joss exchanged glances with Patty, who seemed just as confounded as he felt. Morgan immediately lifted the glass to his lips again and practically inhaled a mouthful. Patty's jaw hit the floor.
Wow, Morgan. Need a drink much? A few drinks? What's that, your third double?
Morgan didn't even glance her way before taking another swig. Something told Joss that it would be wise for him to keep his mouth shut, so he did just that. An enormous slice of cheesecake came on a plate painted with lovely images, created from strawberry glaze and berries, but Joss set it to the side, unable to eat even another bite. After devouring his dessert in two satisfied bites, Abraham sat back in his seat, carefully wiping his mouth clean with his napkin, and setting it on the table before turning his eyes to Joss. There was an air about him that suggested that, for his uncle anyway, the real dessert was about to begin.
Did you enjoy your meal, nephew?
Joss looked up, ripped from his thoughts. He looked at his plate, full of uneaten food, and set his fork down beside it.
Absolutely. It was delicious. I'm just not very hungry. Of course he wasn't hungry. It was hard to eat with waves of immense hurt and fury coming off Morgan like this. Abraham turned his eyes, setting his sights on the subject of Joss's distracted thoughts. His words sounded like they'd been given through smirked lips, but Abraham's expression held no such thing.
How did you like the service tonight, Morgan?
He drained his glass of amber liquid, leaving behind a few lonely ice cubes that rattled as Morgan slammed it on the table in front of him. When he looked at Abraham, his expression made Joss cringe. Everyone else at the table grew eerily quiet. Morgan's words seeped out of him in a hiss.
You have a sick sense of humor, Abraham.
Abraham seemed completely unaffected.
And you have a flawed sense of loyalty.
Morgan dropped his eyes to his now empty glass. It looked very much like he wished it were full again.
Meaning what, exactly?
You know very well what I mean.
Abraham sat forward in his seat, eyes on Morgan the entire time.
How did you get into that club? What exactly is it that you're hiding from us?
Joss's heart picked up its pace. There was no way his uncle was going to let this go, let it slide away into the land of the forgotten. This battle of wills was apparently too important to him to lose. Morgan picked up his glass again and lifted it to his lips, as if he could coax more of the amber liquid to appear. When he set his glass back on the table, quieter this time, his voice was softer.
I am hiding nothing at all from the group, Abraham. And it sickens me that you would go to these lengths to try to uncover some fictional conspiracy that you've cooked up in your mind.
To what lengths are you referring exactly?
Abraham shook his head, toying with him.
Come, come. No secrets among friends and slayers, am I right?
Morgan's jaw was so visibly tight that Joss was quite concerned that he might grind his teeth down to nothing if he wasn't careful.
You know that Jack, or Jacques as he's calling himself now, was my brother, before he turned.
Abraham nodded.
By choice, your brother chose to become a vampire, true?
Morgan looked around the table, at each face but Abraham's, before offering up a response. When he spoke, a cloak of shame seemed to fall over his features.
It's true. Jack came to me 10 years ago, when I was 15, and told me that he'd arranged to become a vampire. He wanted my blessing, but I refused. Until tonight, we hadn't spoken since that day. I vowed never to see him again.
Joss glanced at his fellow slayers. Each of them darted a questioning look at Abraham, who folded his arms in front of him.
Don't make this about pity, Morgan. I brought you here tonight to remind you that I am well aware of your dishonest nature. When your father and I approached you at the age of 18 and informed you that you were a slayer, we asked if you knew anything at all about Jack's strange disappearance 3 years prior. You shook your head and said that you had no idea what had happened to him. A lie, correct?
Morgan hung his head in response. Abraham nodded, as if answering for Morgan. All eyes were on him.
Yes, it was a lie. Because until you turned 21, you and Jack were still in contact, albeit secretly. Even tonight, you lie, stating that you'd never spoken to him after the night he confessed to you when in all actuality, you were quite close for several years after he turned, correct?
Morgan had slumped in his seat. Joss couldn't decide if he looked broken or relieved.
I kept his secret. He was my brother. What was I supposed to do?
You were supposed to tell the society. As the words escaped Joss, they surprised even him. They weren't full of accusation or superiority. He wasn't judging Morgan in the slightest manner. His words were simply a matter of fact. In a situation like that, no matter how deep you are into the web of lies you've created, a slayer is expected to confess all to the Slayer Society. And in a way, doing so unburdens the slayer. Joss swallowed hard and looked at his uncle. The sudden, jolting urge to tell him about Dorian seized Joss. Looking over at Morgan, the urge didn't dissipate at all. Did he really want to be in the state that Morgan was in a few years? Did he seriously plan to keep this secret hidden when he had no proof that keeping it would help him in any way?
Abraham met his eyes, and the word no rang through Joss's thoughts loud and clear.
Something you care to add, Joss?
For a moment, Joss allowed his lips to part. He let the confession form on his tongue, where it sat like a bitter pill before he swallowed it down, its jagged edges scraping against his throat. He couldn't escape the feeling that telling Abraham about Dorian would be a huge mistake, even though he had no reason to think so. And he really disliked the way that Abraham was trying to bully a confession out of Morgan by involving the brother that Morgan had, for some reason, cut out of his life. So with the bitter confession trailing its way down his throat, leaving behind a nasty aftertaste that reminded Joss of old pennies, he looked his uncle dead in the eye and said, "What do you suppose the society would think of what you're doing to Morgan right now? Do you think they'd approve? Be proud?" He didn't mention the fact that the Slayer Society would likely want Morgan to kill his brother, Jacques, and hoped that Abraham wouldn't either. "I don't. I think they'd be pretty disgusted with the way you're handling this. Neither Morgan nor I are keeping any secrets from the society, Uncle. I suggest you make peace with that." Abraham raised an eyebrow.
"Or?"
Joss plucked a cherry from his glass and popped it into his mouth. "Or I'll report you for needlessly harassing your fellow slayers." At this, the table grew extremely silent. It was a serious charge, and unless Abraham could somehow uncover their secret to support his defense, it was highly unlikely that he'd escape that charge punishment-free. Abraham's shoulders visibly tensed, though it was clear by the look on his face that the last thing he wanted was for his nephew to comprehend that he was feeling even slightly on edge at the notion of being formally charged by a fellow slayer, especially a fledgling slayer like his nephew. He looked at the table for a moment before returning his gaze to his nephew.
"All right. I can see how this is going. So I'll ask once more and then drop it forever, Joss. Is there or is there not something that you and Morgan are keeping from me?"
Joss tensed his jaw in irritation at Abraham's persistence. "Uncle, if either of us had anything at all to tell you, I assure you that we would." Joss wasn't sure why he felt the need to keep Dorian a secret, or why Morgan felt the need to protect Joss's secret. He just couldn't bring up anything about Dorian. Not yet. Not until he'd learned why Dorian had given him his stake. Abraham watched him for a while before nodding. Whether it was in agreement or a way of saying that he knew the truth lurking in Joss's expression, Joss had no idea. He only knew that the matter was settled for the moment, and they could return to base without continuing the argument. Abraham dropped cash on the table, and as the group made their way to the door, Joss couldn't help but notice the distinct lack of Morgan's presence. He looked back and found Morgan in a heated conversation with his brother at the table they just left. His brother reached out to grab him by the sleeve, but Morgan violently shook his sibling off and growled,
"No, Jack, what part of never don't you understand?"
Morgan pulled away from him and brushed roughly past Joss. As he did so, Jack, the once man who was the now vampire, Jacques, called after him, his voice full of heartbreak.
"You came to me, Morgan. Remember that."
Then Jacques met Joss's eyes.
"Please, watch after him."
"Morgan can watch after himself," Joss set his jaw. He couldn't believe that this was Morgan's brother, despite the facial similarities. Jacques shook his head.
"Not now. Not with all of Elysia out for your heads."
Joss looked at him, at this man who had been Morgan's closest relative at one point in time. "Then help us end our stay here, Jacques. Do you know where the remaining brothers are?" Jacques grew quiet, his eyes flicking around the room momentarily. He whispered,
"I cannot tell you. They would have my head. But you're right, young one. They are like animals."
Without another word, Joss nodded and moved out the door, joining his fellow slayers half a block up. He walked in step beside Morgan, neither of them speaking until the rest of the slayers had filed into their base of operations in front of them. As soon as they did, Morgan stopped Joss with a hand on his shoulder. His eyes were red and moist, as if the tears that he'd been holding in were finding their way out against his will.
"Joss," he said, his voice shaking slightly, "thanks for sticking up for me.
Your uncle, he can be difficult, you know? Of course you know. If anyone knows, you do.
Joss nodded in response. He did know. Abraham wasn't exactly the easiest person on the planet to get along with. It wasn't like Joss disliked him. In fact, he greatly admired his uncle. But Abraham's affections were not easily won, not by a long shot.
No problem, Morgan. But hey, about your brother, you okay?
Morgan shook his head.
Whether I am or not is none of your concern, little brother. Don't give it a second thought. Not even about your uncle. I don't hold grudges and won't start now, so it's best we just leave my past in the dark where it belongs.
A hot pain passed through Joss's center.
Morgan, you're not the only person to have lost someone because of vampires, you know?
Morgan nodded. He knew about Cecile. Of course he did. They all probably did. The idea of them all knowing his darkest secret made Joss's stomach flip-flop.
You're right, little brother. But knowing that doesn't make it any easier to face having lost them. Am I right?
His stomach still doing a flip-flop, Joss nodded in agreement. Just as nothing that Morgan could say to him or share with him could ever ease the pain of losing Cecile, nothing at all that Joss could say or do could possibly make Morgan feel any better over losing his brother to the vampires. After a moment of shared silence, Morgan climbed the steps to the brownstone and soon after, Joss followed. As he passed the open library doors, Abraham called to him.
Oh, Joss, I was meaning to ask you over dinner. How do you propose we should proceed in our continued search for the two remaining vampire brothers? In other words, when are we taking a little field trip to Central Park, exactly?
Joss bristled. Tomorrow night, Uncle. Abraham raised his eyebrows slightly, as if he were mildly impressed.
Tomorrow night, nephew. Alert the team if you would over breakfast, except for Morgan, who won't be joining us.
Joss furrowed his brow in concern.
Why won't he?
Abraham plucked a newspaper from the table next to the chair he sat in and smoothed it out in front of him.
Because I'm not sure I can trust him on my team or with my nephew. His brother, it turns out, is quite close to a vampire who tried to kill me twice now. And I fear that Morgan may be feeding him information.
Uncle Abraham, Morgan is...
Have you learned nothing from that whole experience with Cyrus last summer, Joss?
Abraham's words were so jarring that they hit Joss in the center of the chest like a fist. He stammered to speak.
Of course I have.
Abraham looked him over before turning his eyes to an article in the paper.
Good. Then alert the team over breakfast. Sans Morgan.
Joss's chest still ached from his uncle's jab. One thing was for certain about Abraham McMillan. He pulled no punches. If your baby was ugly, he was going to tell you about it.
And if Morgan asks why he's not invited, what should I say?
Abraham's eyes were scanning the words on the page as if he'd already completed his half of the conversation they were having.
He won't. He'll already know.
Joss didn't want to question how Abraham knew this, but he suspected it was because he and Abraham had worked together for so long. Abraham knew Morgan better than Joss did, so if he said that Morgan would react in a certain way, then Joss was inclined to trust him. He nodded at his uncle and turned to leave the library. As he moved up the stairs, Joss's footsteps felt heavy, growing heavier with every step he took. He didn't much care for the fact that he had to tell everyone that they'd be doing a stakeout in Central Park, and he cared less that he'd have to be the one to tell Morgan that he wasn't coming along. He liked Morgan, despite the fact that Morgan's brother was a vamp, and despite the weird sensation that maybe he couldn't trust Morgan, couldn't trust anyone. As he entered his room to get ready for bed, Joss had a terrifying thought. What if he would never be able to trust anyone ever again? It lingered in the forefront of his mind as he stripped down to his boxers, as he brushed his teeth, as he climbed into bed, as he pulled the sheet up to his waist, and when he closed his eyes and slipped off to sleep, his nightmares were not about Cecile, but about the immense, immeasurable length of his life that he might spend irrevocably and utterly alone. Chapter 19. an evening in Central Park. The next morning, Joss took his time showering and going through his morning routine. When he opened the bathroom door, Patty passed by, a mug of coffee clutched in her right hand. She grunted a good morning in his direction, and Joss stepped out into the hall. The smell of bacon filled the air, beckoning to him from the kitchen downstairs. Behind him, he heard footsteps. He turned to see Morgan coming down the hall. Morgan nodded to him but said nothing. As he passed, Joss almost said something, hello, good morning, something, but then, for whatever reason, he didn't. Instead, he followed Morgan down the stairs and into the kitchen, joining the others at the table, which was filled with plates heaping with bacon, scrambled eggs, and toast. The smells were so good that Joss wondered if the way the food tasted could possibly live up to it. He bit into a slice of buttered toast as Patty heaped a small mountain of scrambled eggs onto his plate, and its crunchy texture melted onto his tongue. An mmm sound escaped him before he realized it was he who made it. Ash and Patty chuckled before Patty said, "Hungry much, kid?" Joss belched, which erupted more laughter. After they'd eaten most of what was on the table, and it had become crystal clear that Abraham wouldn't be joining them, Joss set his fork down, wiped his mouth with his napkin, sipped his orange juice, and said, "So I have a plan." Ash, Creighton, Patty, and Morgan looked his way, their eyes full of curiosity, and Morgan's tinged with sadness. In the most determined tone possible, Joss said, "Tonight we're staking out Central Park. I overheard Cage telling his intended victim about hunting there, so the smart thing to do is to investigate the area and see if maybe we can locate the remaining two brothers. I've killed two. That means there are just two left before we're done with this job. So let's get out there and stake these things so we can all sleep a little better at night." To his surprise, maybe he'd expected more laughter or a few shaking heads, all three slayers nodded slowly, admiration sparkling in their eyes. Morgan reached over and gave his back a pat.
"Sounds like a solid plan, little brother. You plan on stopping by the morgue first, right? To inspect Cage's body?"
"Of course," Joss smiled, biting the inside of his cheek, bracing himself for his next words. He met Morgan's eyes and took a slow breath. "Oh, and there's just one thing. Morgan, you won't be joining us." Morgan nodded just as slowly as Joss had breathed.
"Of course not. I'm compromised because of my brother. It's all right. I need to spend a little time organizing my notes on what we know about Elysia in New York anyway."
At that moment, Joss realized something that shook him a bit. His inner actor was clearly superior to Morgan's, because at the moment, despite his reassuring smile, Morgan's actor was failing completely at passing off his disappointment for casual tones. They cleared the table quietly, and as Creighton was placing the last plate inside the dishwasher, he turned back to Joss, who was wiping down the counters with a sponge.
"What time are we staking out the park, kid?"
Joss pulled a time out of the air, hoping it sounded like a wise idea. 9 o'clock? We'll assemble in the library about a half hour before."
"Don't worry about Cage. I'll inspect his corpse. Compromised or not, I'm good enough to pick at a dead body, if nothing else. You guys worry about the task at hand."
Morgan's words lacked emotion, as did the expression on his face. His inner actor, apparently, had found the strength for Act Two. He finished folding the kitchen towel and hung it over the oven door bar. Then he quietly left the room, leaving the others exchanging glances full of pity. But there was no changing it. Abraham had given explicit instruction that Morgan was not to join their stakeout, so Joss had no choice but to listen. Joss spent most of the day writing in the journal in the back of his field guide, annotating everything he'd experienced over the last few days. When he finished, he read over some of the notes that Morgan had given him regarding the vampire brothers and what the society knew about them, which wasn't much. Then, whether in preparation for a late-night stakeout or completely by accident, Joss fell asleep. He, thankfully, did not dream. He awoke just past 8 that evening and made his way down to the kitchen to make himself a sandwich for dinner. Then, glancing at the clock, he gathered his slayer tools and moved into the library to wait for his team. He was joined shortly by Ash and Patty, followed soon by Creighton and his uncle Abraham. In a few minutes, they'd assembled and moved out the front door, leaving Morgan behind to deal with Cage's remains. If someone had covered Joss's eyes and ears and led him to the heart of Central Park before allowing him to see and hear where he was, he would never have guessed that he was in the middle of the largest, most populated city in the United States. All around him were trees and greenery, wildlife, and the quiet sounds of nature. He couldn't help but marvel that a place that offered such serenity existed in such an exciting metropolis. And yet here it was, covering more ground than he had ever dared imagine. It was beautiful. The cityscape was beautiful, too. But this was different. Patty looked less than impressed as she stepped up beside Joss. Her lips were pursed, her eyes glazed from the immediate onset of boredom. When she sighed, Joss knew that it was for him, a reminder, perhaps, that he was the one who'd brought them here, and if nothing turned up from this little field trip, that it would be his fault that she'd wasted a night in the woods rather than scoping out the city's nightlife for any sign of fanged monsters. She sighed again, as if to drive her point home, before speaking,
"So, what now, kid?"
Abraham's voice broke in then from behind Joss, dripping with an arrogance that Joss couldn't really wrap his head around.
"Yes, nephew. Please enlighten us. What are your plans for this reconnaissance exactly?"
"It's not reconnaissance. It's a stakeout." Joss felt the corner of his mouth twitch. Despite what his uncle Abraham might think, he did know the difference between the two. Reconnaissance was what one did when they watched a certain area, certain people, and gather information about them. A stakeout was that too, but it also led to action if action is called for. As if in response to his words, Joss's body became acutely aware of the stake in his back belt loop, hiding under his t-shirt. Apart from Morgan, he hadn't told any of the other Slayers about it yet, and was under the assumption that once in a vampire versus Slayer showdown, they'd forgive him. Of course, Uncle Abraham would have questions, lots of questions, and Joss would answer them all, but not now. For now, his stake remained a secret. Ash chuckled. At a glance from the others, he wiped his grin away. "Sorry. It's just... stakeout? Come on, that's funny. No one else thinks puns are funny? I'm the only one?" Being that no one else smiled, it had apparently been decided that yes, Ash was the only person in the group who found Slayer puns funny, except for Joss, that is, who smiled inwardly at the simple humor. Ash was all right. When their eyes turned back to Joss, the actor inside of him took center stage. He straightened his shoulders and spoke with a confidence that he didn't feel in the least. "Let's set up a 200-yard perimeter, 2 in the trees, 3 on the ground. We'll wait for an hour, then shift locations. By morning, I want a sizable chunk of this park covered." Creighton and Ash exchanged looks with Patty, and all three fought to hide impressed smiles. Abraham grumbled,
"Who gets what position?"
Expecting his uncle's doubtful tone, Joss didn't miss a beat. "Patty and Ash, I want you treetop. Uncle Abraham, Creighton, and myself will cover things from down here. Signal us if you see anything." Patty blinked.
"Signal you? With what exactly?"
They all looked at him expectantly. Joss swallowed hard. "Bird call?" Much grumbling followed. Joss blinked, not understanding their reluctance. "You guys do know how to do bird calls, right?" Awkward silence and glances around at the various greenery gave Joss his answer. The Slayers could survive for a week on a diet of bark and berries, but not a single one of them had any idea how to mimic the cry of a mourning dove. Joss cupped his hands together, as if in prayer, and spread his thumbs slightly apart before putting them to his lips and blowing. The Slayers watched in awe as he perfectly mimicked a mourning dove's cry. They practiced for several minutes before moving ahead with their plans. As Ash walked past him, he grinned and spoke under his breath in a tone that sent proud prickles over the back of his neck. "Yes, sir." Abraham's eyes slanted in suspicion.
"Perhaps it would be best for you to be treetop, nephew. You are unarmed, after all."
Joss swallowed hard. Inside his mind, the actor shrugged, at a loss for what to say. Patty shook her head.
"Leave the kid alone, Abraham. You said he was taking point on this little adventure, so let him take point. You can't run everything, despite what you might think. Joss has his reasons for choosing those assignments, and if he's wrong,
He'll pay for it, but why not let him learn through experience rather than coddling him like some toddler who's never seen death or felt true pain before?
Inside Joss's mind, the actor's jaw dropped. Recovering, Joss simply nodded sternly at his uncle, who set his jaw and disappeared into some nearby bushes. Patty crossed in front of him and scurried up a tree. It took Joss a moment to realize that he was totally alone. After a moment, he walked calmly but alertly through the park until he located a spot just outside of the reach of the streetlight in which to hide. He crouched in the darkness, watching as a few tourists wandered through. Soon the park seemed empty. Time passed quickly, and the slayers changed locations. Every hour they moved to new ground, always with Patty and Ash in the trees and Abraham, Creighton, and Joss on the ground. At the sixth hour, bored and exhausted, his leg muscles aching from crouching, standing and walking, Joss allowed a sliver of doubt to pierce his soul. What had he been thinking? There was nothing here. No vampires, no monsters, just him and his crew on a failed mission. With no further clues on how to locate the remaining vampire brothers, it was over. The Slayer Society would have his head for this failure, and his grandfather would roll over in his grave. And very soon, Joss would join him in his next great adventure. Chapter 20. Closer Still. Just as Joss was about to break radio silence and call out to his fellow Slayers that the stakeout had been a miserable failure, his cell phone buzzed. Withdrawing it from his pocket, he flipped it open and answered in a hushed voice, full of surprise. Henry? His cousin had never called him on his cell before, especially after Joss had staked his best friend Vlad, so he had no idea why he'd call now, unless it was something really important.
Listen, Joss, I didn't plan on speaking to you ever again, but this is important. Some chick stopped me at the mall here in Stockerton tonight, asking all sorts of questions about you.
Henry was all business. Joss wet his lips and looked around just in case anyone or anything approached.
A girl? What did she look like? About 15, kinda hot, weird hair.
Cat. Of that, Joss had no doubt. Henry paused, and for a brief moment, the edge in his voice softened.
Anyway, she had a weird look in her eye every time I said your name, like a crazy look. You should watch out for her. Just be careful, okay?
Joss swallowed a lump that threatened to grow in his throat.
Thanks, Henry. I appreciate it. Maybe next time I'm in town, we could talk, you know?
Then the line went dead. His heart sank, and as he returned his phone to his pocket, he wondered if he and Henry would ever be friends, would ever be brothers again. Words entered his mind, words spoken too long ago, and he wondered whether or not they were true.
Forever, Henry? Forever and ever.
Then Joss heard the sounds of heavy breathing, coupled with the slapping of shoes on pavement. Was this a crazy runner out for some very early morning jogging? He'd wait for them to pass before contacting the other Slayers and telling them his plan was a failure. But the shoes. The runner's shoes sounded off, somehow. Like the soles were harder than the usual running shoe rubber. He watched the path out of bored curiosity, wondering what kind of person chose to run for entertainment purposes. Running was hard work. Running was something one did with purpose, not something one would normally choose to do rather than reading a book or watching a movie or playing a video game full of zombie splattering awesomeness. But to each their own, he supposed. The breathing sounded heavy and tinged with panic, sending the tiny hairs on the back of Joss's neck on end. It wasn't the sound of a runner enjoying him or herself, but the sound of someone fleeing, someone running from something that had frightened them. Every single nerve in Joss's body was on alert as he waited for the runner to come into view. What were they running from? He didn't dare move into a position where he could help until he'd identified the source of their terror. Then he saw her, a woman in her mid-30s, dressed in a miniskirt and sequin-covered bustier, as if she'd been enjoying a night out on the town. Her high heels hit the pavement in desperation, slowing her pace. Joss couldn't help but wonder why she didn't kick them off in order to aid in her flight. Her hair, which looked like it had once been tied in a messy bun, flew wild and free. Her breaths grew more panicked, more shallow as she ran, as if she were quickly running out of steam. But Joss couldn't help her yet. He had to see her tormentor, had to see who or what was chasing her before he made his move. She passed by where Joss was crouched in the shadows before she paused to catch her breath. She turned back, eyes on the path, and just as she drew in a sigh of relief, a figure appeared 10 yards away. The woman's eyes widened. She froze. Joss froze too. He wasn't certain at this distance whether or not the man standing on the path was a vampire or not. He just knew that it was a bad man. A man with ill intentions. A man who meant to harm the woman. Unless Joss did something about it. As the man, the creature, whatever he was, advanced on the frightened lady, she seemed held in place by glue. He moved with determination, his steps sure, closer to her, closer still. Joss searched the trees above, but couldn't find Patty or Ash anywhere. Where were they? They'd been within eyesight just minutes before. He whistled the bird call, hoping for some kind of response from his team, but none came. Joss reached behind him, curling his fingers around his stake. The wood felt warm in his hand. He stepped forward, but just as he was about to be free of the bushes he'd hidden behind, the world disappeared in a swirl of black. Chapter 21. A Smile in the Darkness. Joss's face looked drawn, his forehead creased, with dark circles under his weary eyes. His hair was mussed, his clothes disheveled, and as he sighed, a tiny pink flower petal fluttered down and landed on the surface of the puddle he was staring into, distorting his image. Just as his reflection was smoothing out again, another petal fell, then another. Soon, his reflected face was a violent wave of ripples, madly distorted by the falling petals. Then, just as suddenly, the rain of flowers ceased, the petals floating gently to the edges of the puddle. As the puddle stilled, Joss noticed a figure reflected in the puddle, standing beside him, staring at their collective reflection. Cecile. Blonde curls, blue eyes, happy smile. His baby sister. He marveled silently at her image for a while, at her perfect curls, at her tan, healthy skin. She was dressed in a yellow sundress, and her toenails had been painted to match its sunny shade. Something about the way she looked, happy, healthy, serene, sent a wave of relief through him, one that ended in a smile of his own. Cecile was fine. She was alive and well and standing right next to him, staring at their images in the puddle below. Regarding her reflection with a nod, he said, "You look very pretty today, Cecile. But where are your shoes?" Cecile pouted slightly, adorably.
This is the end of disc number 4. Please insert disc number 5. This is disc number 5.
She was alive and well and standing right next to him, staring at their images in the puddle below. Regarding her reflection with a nod, he said, "You look very pretty today, Cecile. But where are your shoes?" Cecile pouted slightly, adorably.
"I don't want to wear shoes, Jossie. They make it hard to run."
Her voice was a song, one that lifted his spirits immeasurably. "What are you running from?" Running. Someone had been running. He'd heard their footsteps, saw them running, and he was about to do something. What was it? Cecile's pout sank some, forming a frown tinged with sadness and traced with fear.
"The vampires."
Joss's heart skipped a beat then, and he felt his jaw tighten. Whoever he'd seen had been running from vampires too, hadn't they? His voice came out more stern than he intended for it to. "You don't have to be afraid of vampires, Cecile. I'm here now, and I'm going to protect you. Haven't I always been here for you? Haven't I always taken care of you?" Cecile nodded slowly, then stopped abruptly.
Except that one time.